be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double.
Hello again. Don't worry. Hello, my name is Gail Moskowitz, and you are listening to Mental Health Matters. I am a licensed clinical social worker, and I've been privileged to practice in Richmond for 31 years. Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health. We talk about issues pertaining to interpersonal relations, addiction, sex and sexuality, and I like to discuss healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and fulfilling life. Psychological issues are complex, and they are, unfortunately, misunderstood. All of us have had issues that are emotional in nature. We all have blind spots, and we all get confused. We have all experienced sadness or depression, anxiety or panic, peer pressure, loss. The list goes on and on. Yet, as a society, we horribly underfund mental health programs. We have morally confused notions of how to make our own pain go away, and we like to do nothing else but judge others for their behavior about how they make their pain go away. Each week on Mental Health Matters, I introduce and discuss a topic, either from my own body of knowledge or with a guest. And then I give you, the audience, an opportunity to ask questions or weigh in on the subject. The number at which to reach us today is 649-9737, 649-9737. Mental Health Matters comes to you every Thursday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM here on your radio dial in Richmond, Virginia. You can also listen to the program in real time by logging onto WRIR's website, www.wrir.org. The show will be available for you to listen to by this evening, along with all of my past shows, by logging onto my website, which you can get to through WRIR's website, and just click my show, and you can get into my website. Or you can send me a note at my email, which is yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com, and Your Mental Health Matters are the letters U-R, and then Mental Health Matters, all one word. If you get onto my website and you're able to do this, you can subscribe to my podcast, which I think is like the way coolest thing ever. It's easy. Just follow the steps. So thank you for listening today. Again, this is Gail Moskowitz, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters. So my topic today is why in 2011, in the United States of America, are our most vulnerable citizens homeless? This is part one of a two-part series. And there could not be a more important show, and I know I've done shows before about homelessness, because it is so entwined with the pain of profound mental illness and multifactorial mental illness and substance abuse. And it is really, it boggles my mind, no matter how much we talk about this, it still boils down to the same thing, which is not much gets done and stays done for a lot of reasons. I'm hoping that our guest, Robin Gahan, who is a social worker, and she's the policy and program manager for the Virginia Coalition to End Homelessness. And I'm hoping that Robin might be able to shed a little light on some of these statistics for us and maybe somehow begin to talk about what can we do? What can you do? What can I do to perhaps make this issue something that we can begin to wrap our arms around? So this is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. The number at which to reach us today is 649-9737. Robin, thank you for coming and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So the statistics are striking and sad. Estimates range from 25% to 45% of the more than 700,000 people who are homeless on any given night that they have a serious mental illness. And another statistic that just takes my breath away is that one out of every 50, or about 1.5 million American children, are homeless each year, according to a 2009 study by the National Center for Family Homelessness. It's just striking. And, you know, the numbers are just mind-boggling. So, and I understand that you must understand this really deeply. So just tell me how you began to see homelessness as the issue you wanted to put your vocational energy into. How did you become so passionate about this?
I would say, you know, when I moved to Richmond almost 11 years ago, it was very apparent to me just by looking around, walking the streets, that so many people were without permanent homes and were living in the park. And particularly when I first came to Richmond as a student at VCU, I came to study theater and quickly switched to a path that I thought would allow me to do much, much more work and do something about the problems that I saw. And so I changed my major to social work, and I think it was probably one of the best decisions I ever made. Just seeing people that were literally in the park across from my dorms as a freshman was just not acceptable to me. I think it's very easy for people to tune out and, you know, assume that that could never happen to them. But I really think that homelessness can and does happen to just about everybody.
Oh, I definitely think it's one of those issues where you say they are the other. Mm-hmm. And that population of the other isn't us. This would not happen to me.
Exactly.
So here you are, you're a young girl. You're at a dorm across the street from a park full of people who I know consistently have homeless people sleeping in that park.
Right.
I know that. It didn't frighten you, but instead it emboldened you?
There may have been times I should have been frightened when I think about when I was younger. But at the same time, you know, my personal philosophy is that everyone is deserving and everyone has a story. And I think when you take time to get people's stories and understand the complexity of the problems that have either led to where they are or that have kept them where they are, specifically for people who are homeless, it can be really enlightening.
Did you talk to the people across the street and get their stories?
Whenever I encounter people on the street, you know, and someone asks for change, more often than not, I don't have it on me, but I just am willing to make eye contact. And I think that's one of the most important parts, is that not forgetting that these people are human beings and deserve our respect. But I think where that empathy and that passion led to me where I am today, serving as the policy and program manager with the coalition, is really about engaging more systematic level change and really wanting to move Virginia forward, because I really believe that we have the capacity to do it. And I think specifically, Governor McDonnell last year proposed a housing policy framework that has a plan to reduce homelessness by 15% by 2013. My executive director, Phyllis Chamberlain, was a part of a committee that worked on that plan. And so where we are today in 2011, nearly 2012, we're at a point where we're really trying to ensure that their resources are there to fulfill that goal of the plan in reducing homelessness by 15%.
So I guess my question is, because we have had such a sort of a sharp downturn in the economy, so here there's this plan to reduce homelessness by 15%, but who's vulnerable to be homeless,
right?
And is the vulnerability going up?
Well, I can say in Virginia, over the course of a year, 40,000 to 50,000 people experience homelessness.
Wow.
And
say that again.
In Virginia, over the course of a year, 40,000 to 50,000 people, and that includes families and children and single adults, experience homelessness. And in any given night in Virginia, we know 8,913 people are experiencing homelessness. So tonight, that many people will be without permanent safe shelter.
And who are these people? How did they become vulnerable to be homeless?
Well, I think, like with most things, the population we're talking about is so diverse. We're really talking about families and children, and of course families are a system that is very complex. Then we have youth, particularly youth who are aging out of foster care, unaccompanied youth. And then we're really talking about single adults, who are most often the people we see on the streets. And more often than not, they're defined as chronically homeless, which means they've been living on the street for at least a year or more. And those individuals in particular have their own unique set of vulnerabilities, particularly medical vulnerabilities. We know that people living on the street are 3 to 4 times more likely to die than you or I or anyone else, with a lifespan 25 years shorter than the average American. So that's about 47 years of age, which is really young.
Yes. From what?
Well, their research came out of Boston's Healthcare for the Homeless, Dr. Jim O'Connell and Stephen Wang, who I think for most people who are passionate about homelessness, kind of are the gurus, if you will. And they defined some criteria or vulnerability factors that increase people's likelihood for death. And those are more than 6 months of homelessness and either end-stage renal disease, history of cold weather injuries, HIV or AIDS, liver disease or cirrhosis, being over the age of 60, 3 or more emergency room visits in the past 3 months, and 3 or more ER or hospitalizations, which can be psychiatric as well, in the prior year. And I think the last piece really says a lot about this population. That would be those who are trimorbid, those with a mental illness, who are substance abusing and have a physical disability or medical problem. And we know that anyone with any one of those factors is medically vulnerable and likely to die.
So do people who live on the street, are they more vulnerable to be beaten or murdered or you know, come to a violent end?
I certainly think so. I mean, when we're specifically talking about women, and granted, women are a much smaller proportion of the people who are living on the street. It is predominantly men. As a woman myself, thinking about not having that safety and a door to lock behind you, I can only imagine what people experience. But we know here in Richmond last year, 17 people who were unsheltered died on the streets. Oh. And that's 17 too many.
That is. It's really striking, actually. So has the face of homelessness shifted in the last decade?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Can you say a little bit about that?
Well, again, the Virginia Coalition and Homelessness, we do not provide any direct services. So a lot of information we gain is not just through available research, but also really talking to our community partners and service providers. And what we're hearing from service providers is that more and more families and children are seeking assistance in emergency shelters. And so that is one of the changing trends for sure.
This is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. We're talking today to Robin Gahan, who is the Policy and Program Manager for the Virginia Coalition to End Homelessness. If you'd like to speak to Robin, ask her a question or ask me a question, the number at which to reach me is 649-9737. We do currently have a question. This is Gail Moskowitz. You're on the air. What can we do for you?
Hi, Gail. I've got a quick question for Robin. It might not be a quick answer, actually. I sit on the United Way Council for Housing Stability, and we fund most of the homelessness prevention organizations in the city of Richmond and the Tri-Cities area. And I have noticed...
Can you turn down your radio?
It's not on.
Oh, okay. Then don't turn it down. Okay. I'm so sorry. Go right ahead. Okay.
Anyway, so I have noticed since I've been sitting on the council that there is a lot of help for homeless families and a lot of help for homeless women, but that male population, which again seems to be the largest homeless population and the one with the most challenges, seems to get the least amount of funding and the least amount of resources. And of course, we all know need is up and money is down in this economy. So I'm wondering what policies the Commonwealth might be putting in place, because I truly don't know, that might target this population, because it seems to be the biggest and the one that's most in need.
Wonderful question. Can you take the answer off the air?
Absolutely.
Thank you for calling. What is your name?
I'm Jeannie Boisano.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jeannie.
Thanks for calling.
Sure.
So, Robin, can you answer that? It's a great question.
Yeah, it really is.
It's a great question.
I think what she illuminated is the fact that children and families and women, more often than not, people are going to feel much more empathetic. We look at them as very vulnerable and needing to be protected. Whereas men, more often than not, we're kind of quick to say that they can take care of themselves and address their own problem.
It's sexism.
It could very well
could reverse be. Sexism.
It very well could be, but I think the issue where resources are not as clearly being targeted at this group of people is something that has been changing, particularly around permanent supportive housing, which is a model of housing for individuals who have been homeless, who have more often than not pretty complex issues such as mental illness and substance abuse problems that have just been failed ultimately by the way that we've been addressing homelessness for the past year, many years. And I would say that we in Virginia are certainly headed in the right direction to addressing those needs. Virginia Supportive Housing, who I know you've had Alice here on your show before. Virginia Supportive Housing is the largest provider of that type of housing in Virginia, and we know that we need more of it. VCH actually released a report last year about the state of permanent supportive housing in the Commonwealth, and not only identified the availability of housing and services that are there now, but also the amount of housing that is yet needed to really put a dent in this. And folks can get that on our website. There is a PDF version of that. I think it's chock full of helpful information.
I will definitely put a link to the Virginia Coalition to End Homelessness's website on my site, but I do think it's important to go to their site and look at this information. So now, can I ask a follow-up question to that, which is, so of these gentlemen who are on the street, my guess is that there's comorbidity of substance abuse, mm-hmm. and post-traumatic stress disorder. And how many of these gentlemen are ex-servicemen?
Well, that's another, I think, striking and frustrating piece is that we are talking about people who have served our country as veterans. We're talking about also people who are being released from prison or jails and have that stigma associated with their past. And though they may have, you know, paid their time, there's still a great number of housing barriers, employment barriers for those people. And so
So when they come out of prison, they're released from prison and they have no place to live and people don't want to rent to them because they have a prison record.
Well, I would say that it's not necessarily they have no place to go. I do, and this is certainly not my greatest area of expertise, but, you know, there are a lot of resources in place for more or less transitional housing for that population. We'll just say ex-offenders who are re-entering the community, that population, but it's after that. And it's really about, you know, you think about people, how do any of us get on when we have problems, when we stumble and we fall? We have support systems who help us pick ourselves back up and can help us start anew. And when you're talking about people who have likely burned many, many bridges.
It's a very good point.
There's just not that emotional, familial support that many other Americans have. And some people feel that that is only their fault, that they've burned those bridges. And regardless of how people feel about it emotionally, I think if you really want to put it down to a matter of cost, people living on the street cost us more than to house people. And I just think that it's the moral and the financial right thing to do.
Let's get back to that in a second, but let me put this over on the side for a minute and finish up on Jeannie's question.
Yes.
So what might be going on legislatively that tell us about this this incentive, this plan to reduce homelessness by 2013, and is there anything that specifically speaks to this overwhelmingly male population?
I wouldn't say specifically to gender that anything's being focused on, but when this state plan was identified, it lays out a number of strategies and goals. And so what VCH has done is really taken four of those goals, looked at the strategies outlined by that plan, and then emphasized some policy priorities and recommendations. And the big, big piece that we're focusing on this year is a Virginia Housing Trust Fund. And there is a campaign of which we're a part of, along with groups like HOME, Housing Opportunities Made Equal, Better Housing Coalition, LISC, and Habitat. a lot of housing providers and advocates, as well as we're serving as the primary homeless advocate entity. And we are requesting that this housing trust fund be put forward as a way to develop physical units of housing, or bricks and mortar, if you will. And we specifically have asked that 20% of that funding for the Virginia Housing Trust Fund be targeted to families and individuals experiencing at risk of homelessness. And we'd really like to see that funding be able to be used for rental assistance, to be able to use for supportive services such as for individuals who are experiencing mental health or substance abuse problems. Those are the pieces that are most often missing when we're talking about the development of housing and addressing housing needs. And if December 19th, the governor's budget will be released, and we'll have a much better sense then of whether or not this housing trust fund is actually part of that budget, or whether we'll need to continue to advocate for it through the actual legislative session.
Is there anything our listeners can do to ensure that this happens?
Yes. We have, again, a wider variety of information on our website, which is www.vceh.org. One of the major things we're working on right now is getting city mayors, county boards, esteemed business members throughout the community to write letters of support to Governor McDonnell for a housing trust fund. And I have available a template letter and additional information. The reason we're focusing on those people is because they're able to attest to how that type of funding would help address homelessness in their communities. In addition, I think just the average Virginia citizen who wants to do something, we're going to have a housing advocacy day January 12th that we're participating in. So there's a lot yet to come, and we really do need as much voice to be heard on this issue.
So explain to our listeners why it's more expensive to manage why it's more expensive for us to have homeless individuals than it is for us to provide housing.
Sure. I think it boils down to this cycle that essentially occurs. So you have people who are their housing stability is not existent or shaken. We're talking about for people who are living on the street that they're having medical health problems that are further exacerbated by living on the street. So they're in and out of the ER, they're in and out of jails, and because they're sleeping on the street, they're going to get picked up for trespassing or other related problems. And so all of that cycle is so costly. Then when we're talking about families, who, maybe are just a paycheck short of their month's rent, and then they're out on the street. And a lot of times families are able to double up is kind of the language that's used on that. And so they're maybe living with friends or relatives, but more often than not, it's very short term. And nevertheless, is still problematic, especially for children. That's very confusing. But we know that them being in and out of emergency shelters, that families stays in emergency shelters, the length of stay has just grown tremendously. Emergency shelter, as it sounds, is intended to be short term, but it's resulted in a much longer stay. And so
that's more expensive than if we started providing ongoing supported housing.
Right. And there are two different best practice models, because really the populations, when we're talking about families and individuals, there can be a lot of overlap, but more often than not, there is a great difference between them too and their experiences and their needs and the intensity of need. So with chronic individuals, with people who are living on the street, who have these physical and mental health problems, permanent supportive housing is the evidence-based model that has been found to be widely, widely successful. Not only here in Virginia, but nationwide. And then for families, it's really this focus on rapid rehousing, which is ending that cycle as quickly as possible. So when we know families at risk of becoming homeless, or they have become homeless, that we have the capacity and the system to rapidly rehouse them and really end that crisis for the family.
So I wonder about this. I'm going to ask about this. If a child grows up in either intermittent or continuous or revolving door homelessness, are they more likely to be homeless as adults?
Well, I will say that we know that children who experience homelessness have 4 times the likelihood of experiencing delayed development, 2x the rate of learning disabilities, 3x the rate of emotional and behavioral problems, and very high rates of anxiety, depression, and withdrawal. Particularly, there's been some information that that children who were in foster care themselves are at risk of becoming homeless as adults. And so we can't say that there's absolute direct correlation, but...
But clearly what there is a correlation to is chronic stress-related
Absolutely.
Symptoms and mental health issues. And I guess my question is, what is the stigma for a child to go to school and to know they don't have a permanent place? I suspect you don't know the answer to that, but I imagine it's...
But no, I certainly agree that it's... You know, just thinking about what childhood should really be about and the ability to be learning and exploring and trusting is really challenged. And all of those basic needs that we have and the sense of safety and
there is a basic need for stability and a sense of safety. And if an individual doesn't grow up with those things, they become more vulnerable to
certainly.
To just everything in general. We're getting to the end of our time today, and I want to just say to my listeners that we're going to continue this conversation next week with Robin. So I hope you'll tune in again next Thursday where we'll speak about the rest of these issues. But just to kind of end the conversation today, and we'll talk more about it next week, but just tell me really quickly what the Virginia Coalition to End Homelessness is. And actually, you know what? This is terrible. I asked you that, and I'm not going to even give you time to answer it. So listen next Thursday, and you can hear
sure.
the end, and you can hear the answer to that question. I'll ask you another question instead, which is, are you guys successful in helping people to in help it? Are you, do you feel like you're being successful legislatively and policy-wise? And then we'll talk more about the
sure.
policies next
and
week.
And I think this coming legislative session is really going to be telling for us. I mean, we all know that the economy is certainly a barrier.
We're going to talk about the upcoming legislative session, the economic parts and pieces of that. This is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and I hope you'll tune in next Thursday to hear the second part of this interview with Robin Gahan. Thank you for tuning in.
Be happy.